Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Casting the Net. As it is the Lenten season, we are continuing our conversation on Lent, and in particular this week, it's the themes of Father Dubé and how conversion is at the center of Lent, and just the general understanding that Lent is a change for the better, a movement towards something better. So we hope you enjoy today's episode, and we will see you again next week.
Hi, I'm Father Dave Nuss, together with Father of Four, Rick Lingvay. Welcome to Casting the Net. We are in search for catching the faith. Hey, friends, we are back for another session of Casting the Net. Father Rick and Dave. There's an outtake.
That's right.
Who,
from the top.
Here, brother, who am I? It's kind of one of these days.
I'm going to answer in the rabbinical fashion. I don't know. Who are you? Who would you say that you are?
Well, I'm looking at my license. It says that I'm Dave.
Well, let's go with that then.
Let's try that. Let's reset that. Father David Rick.
There you go.
We're casting the net.
Nailed it.
Just say, learn from our mistakes, right? That's what we're about. Friends, we're super glad that you're taking time to spend with us as we continue to talk about the influence of our Catholic faith and daily living in ways that's positive and impactful. And we've been discussing in this season, this great season of Lent, a particular work by a contemporary author, Father Thomas Dubé, contemporary in that he died somewhat recently, and a work that is entitled Deep Conversion, Deep Prayer. And as we, I think, stated on a previous episode, Rick, while the work itself is not expressly about Lent or the seven last words of Jesus or something like this, there are resources that are available that focus expressly on Lent, the themes of his work are absolutely at the heart of what this great season of grace entails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, conversion. I mean, that's at the center of Lent. And as you're fond of saying, if you come out the other side of Lent without being changed at least a little bit, then your Lent wasn't a very successful one.
Yeah, I would say it more starkly. It was in vain.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that's what conversion means. It means a transformation or a change, really. And we, I think it's true of me too. Maybe it's true of you as well. But I think in general, we tend to think of conversion in Christian terms as a leaving stuff behind, you know, like giving up the fun stuff. And Dubé goes to great lengths to show that it's a change for the better.
Mm.
Right. And that adverb there, better, that's an important thing to stress, because even I lose sight of that sometimes. It's not just change for the sake of change, which can be scary. I mean, change in general is scary, but it's a movement towards something better.
Yeah.
And that makes the whole thing more appealing.
Yeah. You know, that's a really important point, for the better. Sometimes it doesn't appear that way at first glance. I'm recalling here, These are Dubé's own words. Be converted, that is, changed, refashioned, transformed from your present condition or stance to another. Maybe the opposite, but it doesn't have to be the opposite, right? And some, we might talk about fine-tuning or elevating a little bit more. Conversion or change can be abrupt and dramatic, but oftentimes it's more sequential. Progressive, that maybe we don't even notice the change within ourselves first, but someone else notices a difference in us.
Yeah. I recall what chapter it is exactly. It's maybe five or six. He's talking about the conversion from egoism. Which for him, and we discussed this a little bit last episode, for him, that's the central conversion.
Yeah.
Like transforming into someone who is less and less focused on me, like making myself the center of the world, transformed into a person who is seeing reality as the way, in the way that it is, instead of just the way that I want it to be.
Yes.
And he points out that, you know, this is a hard thing for anybody to accomplish because of original sin.
Exactly.
Even small changes are difficult. So how do we get out of this mire? As long as you're working on that transformation, whether you're spiritually wayward or already on the path to holiness, then you're probably headed upward.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good sign, right? And a lot of people, even if it doesn't necessarily feel that way, people can see it in you sometimes before you can see it in yourself.
Yeah. You know? Let's spend a moment with egoism and maybe draw that out even more concretely in daily living. He'll give examples of egoism to be the immediate response to the situation is my comfort, my safety, my pleasure, my gain, my value, yeah. Right? So whatever that might be, I'm actually turning inward to myself and to see how it impacts me. What difference does this make for me versus, right, an outward recognition of other as other.
Mm-hmm. And he gives all sorts of interesting examples of how this manifests itself in daily living. Showing up late to a meeting, you know, like what I'm doing is more important than what you're doing.
Yes.
And so I'm not going to pay attention to the time.
Yes.
You know,
egoism.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Something that's very, relevant in my own life as a married husband, like, you know, coming home from work. I mean, I work from the home, but just hypothetically, if I were to come home from work tired, and instead of helping with the dishes after dinner, I want to just sit down and you know, veg out. My wife's probably tired too, you know?
Yeah.
Egoism.
Right. And it's so pervasive. It's not that we necessarily think of it as egoism in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own life, I'll have a litany of excuses why I'm able to turn inward and be self-preserving, as it were, versus responding more generously to others in their need. That just might be listening attentively. Or I love the example of you said about coming home, it doesn't have to be from work, just coming home and there's a child or there's children or there are others. And am I even willing to engage? Do I desire to engage?
Yeah. Yeah. There are, of course, what we're talking about now is it's a fundamentally spiritual matter. And so really we need to be open to grace because grace is going to do the hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, again, grace perfects nature, and there are natural things that we can do, I think, that are helpful in making us become more empathetic, just kind of natural exercises that I in my opinion can be useful.
Yes.
You know, I think studies show that generally readers tend to be more empathetic people, especially if you read something that's like character driven, like a biography or a memoir or a novel that's character centric. Like, so you can actually get inside, the main actors, the main players in the story and kind of feel what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Working to become more emotionally intelligent so that, you know, if you can identify the emotions in yourself, you can see them in others as well. I know it's the case that studies consistently show, like in the workplace, people would much rather work for emotionally intelligent people because they're the ones who can step outside their own shoes and into somebody else's and understand them.
Yes.
You know? I think actors are really good at being empathetic or developing tools for empathy. I remember reading a really good interview with Matthew McConaughey, who was a pretty good actor.
Hmm.
And he works on observing people and like picking up little, like mannerisms and things like, you know, people's behavior that might, capture something deeper about the person's personality.
Hmm.
You know, it's so like somebody who walks around with their hands in their front pockets all day, kind of hunched over, you know, if they try to assert themselves in a certain situation, that's going to look unnaturally aggressive.
Hmm.
It's like kind of like stepping outside yourself and observing those around you a little bit more. Like, I think all those are useful tools to work on our empathy, and we'll kind of weed out the egoism. You know, any opportunity you can take to see things from somebody else's perspective is going to be helpful.
Yeah, and also a divine perspective, right? Love of God, love of neighbor. There's that outward trajectory that the mature Christian, the joyful, cheerful follower of Christ, manifests. And this is a season where we make special effort to grow an awareness of our own egoism, so to be changed with God's help, transformed, made different, made better, less beholden to it, instead of coming home and immediately needing to turn on a television.
Mm.
Maybe there's some other activity that's more outward directed. It doesn't mean extroverted. It doesn't mean that it has to be a flurry of activity. So we don't want that to be misunderstood. It has to do with field of vision, that the field of vision is outward looking, empathetic, genuine care and concern towards other or others, not collapsing into self.
Yeah, we're going to delve a little more deeply into this. In chapter 6, he goes through a list of several different reasons why we should want to do this.
Yeah.
Really interesting reading. But one of the points he makes is you're probably going to be happier.
Yeah.
There's going to be less conflict.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be magic. Like, it's going to follow logically. If you're less focused on yourself, then you're going to be, well, let me reverse it a little bit. If I'm egotistical, then I'm going to be those people who aren't myself are going to be viewed as obstacles to me achieving what I want to do in my life.
Yeah.
If I'm less egotistical, there's going to be more harmony in the marriage, in, you know, father son, father daughter relationships, sure. You know, parent child relationships.
Sure.
There's just going to be less conflict, less tension.
Sure. Imagine someone saying to any of us, right, to me, hey, I've got an idea for you to be happier and more peaceful. Gosh, who
I'd sign up for that.
Who doesn't want that?
Yeah.
Right? And here's a pathway that we have before us, always with God's help, to make that happen. And it's not so much that it's about me, it's less about me. And more about God and more about others.
It's a little bit of a paradox.
For sure.
As many things in the faith are.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so it's not surprising.
Yeah. It just seems to be such an apt call today to grow from egoism in a culture that is incessantly fixated on self-promotion and likes and followers and all of these indications that I'm noticed, right? Where value is tied a lot of times to these things. And we have younger and younger generations, sadly, who are mired in this sort of upbringing.
Yeah, the culture doesn't set us up for success in matters of the faith, which just stresses or just underscores the need for times like Lent and organizations or communities like the church.
Yeah,
right. To reinforce and to strengthen us in what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, yeah. The culture honors the very things, right, that limit us and cause us distress, anxiety, worry, fear. And, you know, with that, Father Dubé, he acknowledges that this is the remnant of original sin in all of us, and therefore it's such a strong gravitational pull, and we need the help of others to break free from it.
Yeah. Dubé emphasizes that really strongly. Original sin, you know, showing up in our lives in a way that can be quite subtle. You know, it's not like I wake up every day and explicitly plan to undermine myself. You know, like I just sit at the breakfast table and kind of, you know, rub my hands together and think, all right, how am I gonna screw this up? It can be pretty subtle, especially with the venial sins. And yet it's, you know, along with St. Paul, I would echo St. Paul's words in Romans, right? The good that I want to do, yep. I just can't seem to pull it off.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing here. He says it much more eloquently. Yeah. But in the evil I want to avoid, that's the route I go.
Yeah. Yeah. In that same line, Paul is expressing his remorse about that and his deep desire for it to be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Knight, you know, had a nice 30-year run as the coach at Indiana. Not without some controversy, but the guy knew how to coach.
Yeah.
Coach basketball. He said, you know, everyone wants to win. Not everyone wants to get ready to win.
Ah.
You know, so the goal that we put before ourselves, which sounds so good when we do it, you know, frequently we struggle to get there. Right. And that's what Dubé, we're working into that part of the book where Dubé is going to offer us some insights into how to better accomplish our spiritual goals,
right,
in deep conversion.
Practical program
that
we can take to heart and consider ourselves to do so that we can become better and avail ourselves of the opportunity that Lent truly is.
Yeah. But that conversion from egoism, that's Dubé, as we said, he goes to great lengths to lay that out because it's not only the important first step, like it's the main conversion that we have to effect, have to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, once I remove that obstacle that pits me against you and me against the rest of my brothers and sisters, you know, that's when I can embrace gospel love finally.
Mm. Mm. You know, this Lent, in a more personal point of view, the opportunities that have been before me to live this have been considerable.
Good for you.
Well, yeah, I said the opportunities have been considerable before me. I didn't always say I responded virtuously.
Well, but it's good that God's giving you the opportunities.
An awareness of that, right? There's a, boy, I can't wait to do this, and then other things present themselves. And then the moment of choice becomes, how do I respond, right? With resentment, with anger, with discouragement, with disappointment, or with resolution to do the best I can for those who are before me. But I will say, I see it more as a great manifestation of divine mercy that God mercifully presents these opportunities. Now, I don't always feel joy
in
that moment.
Yeah.
It is mercy, though, that God wishes and so deeply desires to draw us closer to him, that these are opportunities that'll just pepper our day. And if we can see them as such and become more likely to respond to them, right?
Mm-hmm. One of the benefits that Father Dubé cites, it's really an incentive, I guess, to want to pursue a deep conversion is that, you know, your own pursuit of holiness redounds to or trickles down into the lives of others. Like, and this is especially important in family life, right? I mean, my own pursuit of holiness, my own desire to push into a deep conversion, you know, my kids will see that, and my wife will see that, my spouse will see that and want that as well.
Yeah.
And if I really love them, right, in a not egotistical kind of way, but if I really want what's best for them, that has to include what's spiritually best for them as well. Mm. And that means a deep conversion for them too. You know, so they will see the life modeled.
Yeah. Imagine if that's a commitment we make for the remainder of Lent.
Yeah.
For whatever circles of people we encounter.
Mm.
Friends, he's Rick. I'm Father Dave. I, is that right? Did I get that right?
I wasn't listening. I was assuming you get it right.
And we're taking this journey through Lent in a way to elevate ourselves, to break free from some of the stubborn moorings that just limit us and hold us back and compromise our joy with egoism, and turning to a spiritual master, who is Father Thomas Dubé, and others that he cites in his work as a pathway for an especially fruitful Lent. And we hope that you're going to continue to join us. We're Casting the Net. Friends, he's Rick, and I'm Father Dave. a dad and a priest, together trying to become better fathers by catching Christian faith. Thanks for joining us for our conversation, and we hope that you'll connect with us next week for Casting the Net.